Carry on, carry on. The mage sings. One more silent step, and I see that it's ebb beneath him. I cry out. I can't help it. The mage's head turns, his lips still murmuring Queen lyrics. Simon, he says, so startled that he pulls his hands away. Don't stop, I say, falling on my knees. Help her. Simon, the mage says again. Blood flows out of Ebb's chest. Help her, I say. She's dying. I can't, the mage says. But Simon, you're here. I can still help you. He reaches for me, his hands wet with Ebb's blood, and I know I have to tell him now. I stand jerkily, pulling away from him. The mage picks up his blade, it's bloody too, and stands with me. His head is split open above his ear, bleeding down his neck and shoulder. You're hurt, sir. I can help. He shakes his head, staring just past me. I think he's freaked out by my wings, but I'm not sure I can put them away right now. I'm fine, Simon, he says. It's too late. I've already thought about making him better. The gash above his ear heals from the outside in, mending itself. His hand goes to his head, his eyes widen. Simon. My chin starts to wobble, and I squeeze the hilt of my blade till the wobbling stops. I try to think about making Ebb better. I think I've been thinking about it all along, but she still lies there bleeding. The mage steps closer to me, like he's stepping close to an animal. You've come just in time, he says softly. He lifts his hand and touches my face. I feel blood trickle down my cheek. I owe you an apology, he says. I got so much wrong. I look him in the eye. We're the same height. No, sir. Not the power, he says. You are the most powerful mage who ever lived, Simon. You're a miracle. He cups my face in his wet palm. But you're not the chosen one. I'm not the chosen one. Of course I'm not. I'm not the chosen one. Thank magic. This is the only thing anyone has said today that makes sense. But it doesn't make a difference. I still have to tell him. I swallow. Sir, I have something to tell you. Baz and Penelope,
they don't matter now. None of them. The pitches and their war. As if all of magic doesn't hang on the precipice. As if the great devourer hasn't marked our door.
Sir,
I thought I could salvage you,
he whispers. He's standing close to me, holding my face like a baby's or a dog's.
I thought I could keep my promise to take care of you, that I'd find the right text, the missing rhyme. I thought I could fix you. But you weren't the right vessel.
He nods to himself. It's like he's still looking past me.
I got this part wrong, he says.
I got you wrong.
I look down at Ebb, then back at the mage. The humdrum, I say. His face contorts.
You'll never be strong enough to fight him. You'll never be enough, Simon.
It isn't your fault.
It is. I shake my head, and he holds my jaw firmly. Sir, I think my power is tied to the humdrum. I think I might be causing him.
Nonsense.
His spit hits my mouth.
The humdrum was foretold. The greatest threat the world of mages has ever known. Just as the greatest mage was foretold.
But Baz says,
you can't listen to that whelp.
He drops my face and steps back, raising his arms, waving his red sword.
Cut from the same cloth as his mother. Does anyone think that Watford was better under her care? These halls were empty. Only the most prosperous, the most privileged magicians ever learned to speak. Natasha Grimpitch loved her power and wealth. She loved the past, far too much to ever allow Watford to change.
The mage is pacing. He's talking to the floor. I've never seen him like this. He's moving too much. He's saying too much.
Should I weep over her death? He asks, his voice too loud. When it means a generation of magical children have learned how to use their power. Am I supposed to be sorry? I'm not sorry. What is the greater good?
He rounds on me again and clamps his hand where my neck meets my chest, catching my eyes and holding them.
I'm not sorry.
Then he leans closer. His hair brushes against mine.
If I could go back, there's nothing I'd change. Nothing. Except you. I can't fix you, Simon.
He shakes his head, growling and gritting his teeth.
I can't fix you, but I can relieve you. And I can fulfill the prophecy.
I don't know what to say. So I nod. I've known all along that I was a fraud. It's such a relief to hear the mage finally saying it, and to hear that he has a plan. I just want him to tell me what to do.
Give me your magic, Simon.
I take a step back, in surprise, I think. But the mage holds me by the neck. He presses his right hand over my heart.
I can take it. I finally found a way, but then I heard that you'd gotten there first. You can give it to me freely now, can't you? Like you gave it to the pitch brat.
I feel every one of his fingertips against my skin.
Don't make me take it, Simon.
I look down at Eb. Her blood is pooling around her arm and shoulder. It's just reached the tips of her blonde hair.
Think of it, the mage murmurs. I have control that you'll never have. Wisdom, experience. With your power, I can obliterate the humdrum. I can settle these quarrels once and for all. I can finally finish what I started.
What you started?
My reforms,
he hisses. Then his head drops forward like he's tired.
I thought it would be enough to throw them out of power, to change the rules, but they're like cockroaches, these people. They creep up on you as soon as you turn off the lights. I can't focus on my enemies because of the humdrum.
He tilts his head to the right.
And I can't focus on the humdrum because of all this squabbling.
He tilts it to the left.
It was never supposed to be like this.
He looks back up at me.
You were supposed to be the answer.
I'm not the greatest mage, I say.
You're just a child,
he says, disappointed. I close my eyes. The mage pinches my neck.
Give it to me.
It could hurt you, sir. He takes my hands roughly.
Now, Simon.
I open my eyes and look down at our hands. I could give it to him. All of it. I could give it to him. And then it would be him. It would be the mage draining the world of magic, or finding a way not to. I squeeze one hand and give him a bit of magic, a fistful. The mage clenches my fingers and his body seizes, but he doesn't let go.
Simon!
His eyes light up, literally.
I think this will work.
It will work,
my voice says, but I'm not the one speaking. The humdrum is standing beside us, over Ebb's body. The mage goes still, his mouth dropping open. I forgot. He's never seen the humdrum.
Simon,
the mage says.
It's you.
It's the humdrum, I say.
It's you on the day I found you.
His eyes are wide and soft.
My boy.
I'm not him, the humdrum says. I'm not anybody's boy.
You're my shadow, I say to the humdrum. I'm not afraid of him now.
More like an exit wound, he says, or an exhaust trail. I've had loads of time to think about it.
The Insidious Humdrum,
the mage whispers. It's a crap name, the Humdrum says, bouncing his ball. Did you come up with it?
The mage turns to me and grabs both my wrists.
Now, Simon, give it to me. He's right here.
When did you get wings? The Humdrum asks. I'll never have wings. Or a sword. I'll never even have a proper ball. I'd like a football.
The mage jerks on my wrists, still staring at the Humdrum.
Now, Simon, we'll end this once and for all.
Do it, the Humdrum says. He's right. End everything. All of the magic. All of it.
The Humdrum tosses the ball to me, and I push the mage off me to catch it.
Simon,
the mage says. I tuck the red rubber ball in my suit jacket. I'm not sure when I thought up this grey suit. And I look down at the Humdrum. It's the only way. I take the boy by his shoulders. He laughs.
What are you going to do? Hit me? Go off on me? I'm pretty sure that won't work.
No, I say. I'm going to end this. I'm sorry.
You're sorry?
I'm sorry that all the good stuff happened after I left you. The Humdrum looks confused. I close my eyes, and then I imagine myself unlocking every door, opening every window, turning every tap, and pouring it all into him. He doesn't flinch or pull away. And when I open my eyes again, he's still looking up at me, less confused now.
The Humdrum puts his hands over mine and gives me a little nod.
His jaw is set and his eyes are flinty. He looks like a little thug even now. I nod back. I give it all to him. I let it all go.
The mage tries to push us apart. He's shouting at me, cursing, but I'm rooted to the centre of the earth and the mage's hands pass right through the Humdrum. The boy's disappearing. It's getting harder for me to keep my hands on his shoulders. I don't think I'm hurting him, the Humdrum. He just looks tired. He's a hole. He's what's left when I'm done. And sometimes holes want to get bigger. But Baz was wrong. Sometimes they just want to be filled. I give him everything. And then I feel him pulling at me. Before I was pouring the magic, but now it's being sucked out, spilling into a vacuum. My hands slip through the Humdrum's shoulders, but my magic keeps rushing into him. I fall to my knees and it rushes out faster. My fingertips tingle. I smell fire. Sparks chase themselves over my skin. This isn't going off, I think. This is going out.
83. Baz. I can't imagine we're not too late. And on top of everything else, on top of abject failure, I'm so thirsty I could drain a Clydesdale. I should drain that yappy spaniel and put it out of its misery. Maybe I should put Bunce out of hers. We come up over a hill and we can see the school ahead of us. I'm ready to tear through the wide open gates, but the jag gets stuck in the snow. Bunce and I get out and start running across the great lawn. It's a shock when we see Wellbelove running towards us like a panicked rabbit from the opposite direction.
Penelope. Agatha's weeping and panting, and she's running like she's Jessica Ennis, even through all this snow. It's too bad Watford doesn't have a track team. She doesn't stop when she sees us, just grabs my hand and tries to pull me with her.
Run, she says. Penny, run! It's the mage!
What's the mage? I grab her other hand and she runs in place around me, spinning me in a circle.
He's evil, she says. Of course he is.
Baz tries to take her shoulder.
Is Simon here?
Agatha pulls away from him, jogging backwards, then back toward us.
He just got here, she says. But the mage is evil. He's fighting the goat herd.
Eb,
I say. And he tried to hurt me, she says. He was going to do something, take something. He wants Simon.
Come on,
Baz yells. Come with us, I say to Agatha. Come help us. I can't, she says, shaking her head. I can't. And then she runs away.
Baz. Well, beloved runs in one direction, and Bunce runs in the other. There's a noise from the school, like artificial thunder, like a hurricane on a tin roof. I chase after Penny across the drawbridge. As soon as we make it to the courtyard, it's immediately clear where Simon is. All the windows have shattered in the Whitechapel. There's smoke pouring out, and the walls themselves seem to be shimmering like heat on the horizon. The air is thick with Simon's magic, that burning green smell. Bunce stumbles, clutching her stomach. I take her arm and lean against her, propping her up. I'd be surprised if she could cast a cliché right now.
All right, Bunce.
Simon, she says.
I know. Can you take it?
She nods, pushing away from me and shaking her ponytail resolutely.
The miasma gets worse the closer we get to the chapel. Inside the building, it's unnaturally dark, like something more than light is missing. I think I feel the humdrum's presence, the scratch and the suck of him, but my wand stays alive in my hand. Something rolls through me, like a wave in the air, in the magic, and Bunce pitches forward again. I catch her.
We don't have to keep going, I say.
Yes, she says, we do. I do.
I nod. I don't let go of her this time. We walk together towards the worst of it, to what must be the back of the chapel, through doorways, down halls. My stomach roils. There's no more air, just Simon.
Bunce pushes open another door, and we both throw our arms up in front of our eyes. It's bright as fire inside.
Up there,
Bunce shouts. I try to look where she's pointing. The light stutters into blackness, then back again. It seems to be coming from an opening in the ceiling, 20 feet above us at least.
Bunce holds out a hand to cast, but clutches her stomach instead.
I wrap my left arm around her, then point my wand at the trap door.
On love's light wings!
It's a hard spell and an old spell, and it works only if you understand the great vowel shift of the 16th century, and if you're stupidly in love. Bunce and I float to the ceiling, and I don't try to shield us because there's nothing that could. We climb into a room too loud and strobing to describe, then kneel in broken glass, trying to hold ourselves together. Bunce throws up. In the seconds when the light isn't too bright or gone completely, I see Simon in the middle of the room holding on to the humdrum like he's about to tell him something really important. Simon has those red wings again, and they're spread wide. The mage is here, too, clawing at Simon uselessly. Nothing can move Simon when he looks like that, his shoulders hunched forward and his jaw pushed out. Bunce is on all fours, trying to lift her head.
What's he doing?
She rasps, then heaves again.
I don't know, I say.
Should we try to stop him?
Do you think we could?
The light is getting less intense. So is the dark. I can hardly see the humdrum anymore, but Simon still has something in a death grip. The noise is changing too, getting higher, like it's winding up from a roar to a whine. When the sound stops, my ears pop, and Simon falls forward to the ground, lit only by moonlight through the broken windows. He falls, and he doesn't get up.
Penelope. For a moment, the only sound is Baz howling. Then the mage falls on Simon's limp body.
What have you done?
He's shaking Simon and beating on his wings.
Give it to me.
Simon lifts an arm to push the mage off, and that sign of life is all it takes to unleash Baz. He moves so fast my eyes can't focus on him until he's holding the mage by the chest, his fangs open over the man's neck.
No,
Simon whispers, trying to pull himself up by grabbing their legs.
The mage points his silver-tipped wand at Baz, but Simon grabs it and holds it against his own heart.
No,
he says to Baz, or maybe to the mage.
Stop!
The three of them twist and stumble. The mage is covered in blood, and Baz's mouth is full of teeth.
Give it to me,
the mage shouts at Simon. Does he mean his wand?
It's gone,
Simon cries, using the wand to hold himself up.
It's all gone.
The mage pushes his wand into Simon's chest.
Give it to me.
Baz yanks at the mage's hair, pulling him backward.
Stop,
Simon cries.
It's gone. It's over.
No one is listening to him. I hold out my ring hand and speak as loudly and clearly as I ever have, letting my magic rise up from the empty pit of my stomach.
Simon says!
Simon's next words ring out, dense with magic.
Stop it! Stop hurting me!
The mage jerks away from him, then sags in Baz's arms. Baz steps back, confused, and lets the mage drop to the floor. Then Baz reaches for Simon, but Simon is kneeling over the mage, grasping at his chest.
I think he's dead. Penny, I think I killed him. Oh, God.
Simon sobs.
Oh, Merlin. Penny.
I'm still shaking, but I crawl across the room towards them.
It's okay, Simon.
It's not okay. The mage is dead.
Why is he dead?
I don't know why he's dead. I don't know what's happening. Maybe that's the only way he could stop hurting you, I say.
But I didn't mean to kill him,
Simon cries, holding the mage up, his arms around his back.
Technically, it was Bunce who killed him,
Baz says, but he says it gently, and there are tears in his eyes.
He's dead,
Simon says.
The mage is dead.
84. Lucy.
I didn't know that something was wrong. I'd never been pregnant before. And no one had ever been pregnant with you, Simon. The books say that you'll feel butterfly wings and twitches. A quickening.
I felt so much more. I felt you humming inside of me. Busy and bright. I felt flushed from my belly to my fingertips. Davy never left my side. He cooked for me. He cast blessings over us. And maybe you'll think that kindness was just for the ritual's sake. But I think he cared for me. I think he cared for you. I think he wanted us both standing beside him in the bright future he was building. A new world of mages. Pregnant women are always tired. They can't hold down their meals. They feel lightheaded. One day, I went out to feed our new chickens, and I realized I couldn't get back to the house. I didn't have enough energy to take another step. I dropped to my knees, then leaned slowly forward, trying to protect you. Then I felt my lights blinking out. Davy was taking a nap inside. When he woke up, he found me there, red and thirsty. He carried me inside, ranting about what could have happened and why I hadn't cast for help. But my magic had gone thin. It had been weeks since I cast a spell. When I'd tried lately, it felt like I was knocking on a hollow box. Everything that was there before just wasn't anymore. Everyone's magic goes a bit wonky when they're pregnant. I felt better the next morning, and worse the next. The pulling in my stomach had gotten stronger, like a crank that kept tightening. I felt like I couldn't stay in the cottage, but I couldn't make it to the door. He needs air, I told Davy, and he didn't argue. He took me out to the empty garden and lay with me in the grass. I needed to feel the ground beneath me and the air and the sun. Better, I told Davy, still feeling the crank turn. When I was alone, I talked to you. I told you about your family, about your grandparents, the cottage, about Watford, where your father and I met. I named you. Simon, I said to Davy. We knew you were a boy then.
All right, he said. Why?
It's a good name. It's a wise name.
Is it a saviour's name?
If he's the great mage, won't his name automatically be a saviour's name, whatever we choose?
Good point,
he said.
Simon.
Simon Snow.
What's that?
His middle name. Simon Snow.
Why on earth?
Because I like it. And because everyone should have a silly middle name.
What's yours?
Winifred. We laughed until it was too much for me. Everyone feels tired when they're pregnant. Everyone feels sick. And strange.
How'd you feel?
Davy would ask. Good, I'd say.
How's our boy?
Hungry. I never told Davy the truth. What could he have done to help me? What would he have done if I'd said, I feel like an empty hallway, Davy, like a wind tunnel, like there's something inside of me, and it isn't just eating me. It's eating everything. But not eating, that's not the right word. Consuming, sucking, devouring. How long does it take for a star to collapse? How many trillions of years? Maybe I shouldn't tell you all this. It wasn't what I came back to tell you. I don't want you to think that it was your fault. You're the child we would have had anyway, Simon. You are ours in every way, and none of it is your fault. We made you this powerful. Like starting a fire in the middle of the forest, we made you this hungry. In the end, I just wanted to see you. And I thought maybe, when you were born, I'd get some of myself back. I should have asked Davy to get help when my labour came on, but we couldn't risk someone finding out what we'd done. You came on the solstice, and you came so easily. I swear you didn't want to cause me any more pain. Your father held you up to me and covered both our faces with kisses. He was the most powerful magician in the world before you, and he cast every safeguard he knew over our heads. I saw you. I held you. I wanted you. That's what I came back to tell you. I loved you before I met you, and I loved you more the moment I held you. And I never meant to leave you so soon. I never would have left you. Simon. Simon. My rosebud boy.
85. Penelope.
We sit there, together. I'm not sure how long. All of us past the point of sorrow and exhaustion and relief. Then Simon takes off his suit jacket, it tears around the wings, and spreads it over the mage's torso. He starts crying again, and Baz pulls him into his arms. Simon lets him.
It's okay, Baz says. It's all okay now.
One arm is tight around Simon's back, and the other is smoothing his hair out of his face.
You did it, didn't you? Baz whispers. You defeated the humdrum. You saved the day, you courageous fuck. You absolute nightmare.
I gave him my magic, Baz. It's all gone.
Who needs magic?
Baz says.
I'm going to turn you into a vampire and make you live with me forever.
Simon's shoulders are heaving. Baz keeps talking about it.
Think about it, Simon. Super strength. X-ray vision.
Simon lifts his head.
You don't have X-ray vision.
Baz raises an eyebrow. His hair is in his face and his hands are bleeding.
I killed him,
Simon says.
It's going to be okay.
Baz wraps both arms around him.
It's all right, love.
Everything is starting to make sense.
Epilogue. Penelope.
I sent a little bird to my mum. There were a bunch of them around. They'd come in through the broken windows and were fluttering around the mage's body. We were all pretty wrecked, Simon, Baz and me. I fell asleep right there, between two corpses. That's how exhausted I was. Simon tried to help Eb, but she was cold. Gone. He didn't cast any spells on her, not even to cover her up. And I thought he must just be as exhausted as Baz and I were, out of magic for once in his life. I didn't understand until much later that his magic was gone for good. Baz was exhausted and thirsty. All the blood everywhere, Eb's, I think, was making him mental. Finally, he started feeding on the birds, which was disturbing, but, like, not half as disturbing as everything else that had happened, and neither Simon nor I tried to stop him. Mum showed up after a while, with Premal, of all people. He'd been helping her look for me. We were asleep by then, so Mum and Premal thought we were all dead. When I sat up, Mum was pale as a visitor. I think it was like she'd walked into her greatest fear for me. Premal wept when he saw the mage. Mum took one look at the mage, cast a spell to preserve his body for the investigation, then never looked at him again. She called Dad and Dr. Wellbelove and a few others from the coven, then took Simon and Baz and me to their room in the tower. Mum's the reason I can get in. She broke the ward when Dad lived in Mama's house, and now all the female Bunces can enter. Premal brought us tea and hobnobs, and the three of us fell asleep again. When I woke up, I told Mum about Agatha. I thought she might still be out there in the snow. When Baz woke up, he called his parents. When Simon woke up, he wouldn't talk. Just drank all the tea we gave him and clung to Baz's arm. I'm not sure what history will say about us. Will they say that Simon killed the mage? That I did? I hope that Baz gets credit for ending the war. The old families were still raring to go when Baz went home, even though the mage was already dead and Simon was powerless, and nobody knew it yet, but the humdrum was gone too. Mum thought the Grimms and Pitches might take the opportunity to seize control of everything. But Baz went home, the coven reconvened, and there were new elections, and the war just never happened. Mum's the headmistress now, officially. The coven appointed her. She tried to talk me into going back to Watford to finish my degree. And if Simon had wanted to go back, maybe I would have made the effort. But there were just too many bad memories there. Every time I try to cross the drawbridge, I get sick to my stomach. I don't know how Baz manages it. Agatha says she's never going back. Over my dead body, she says, which is how I would have ended up if I'd stayed there.
Baz. Today's my leaving ceremony. I'm top of our class. There was no competition after Buns dropped out, so I have to give a speech. I told Simon not to come. It's a bit bleak being surrounded by magicians all the time, when you can't even feel magic. I didn't want him to come to Watford and think about all the things he isn't anymore. Not the mage's heir. Not a mage at all. He's still everything else he's always been. Brave. Honest, inflammably handsome, even with that fucking tail. But I don't think he wants to hear all that. And I find it hard to say, honestly. It's hard for us to talk, sometimes. Lately. I don't blame him. Life hasn't exactly kept its promises to Simon Snow. Sometimes I think I should pick fights with him just to restore his equilibrium. Anyway,
I don't think he'd want to be here. My mother gave the speech at her leavers' day. It's in the school archives. I found it, and I'm going to read from it today. It's about magic, the gift of magic, and the responsibility. And it's about Watford, why my mother loved it. She made this list of everything she'd miss, like the sour cherry scones, and elocution classes, and the clover out on the great lawn. I can't say that I loved Watford like my mother did. This was always the place that was taken from her, and the place where she was taken from me. It was like going to school in occupied territory. Still, I knew I was coming back for my last term, even without Penny and Simon. I wasn't going to be the first pitch in recorded history to drop out of Watford. The speeches are in the Whitechapel. The stained glass has been repaired. My Aunt Fiona's sitting in the front row. She whoops when I'm introduced and I can see my dad wince. Fiona's as cheerful lately as I've ever seen her. She didn't know what to do with herself after the mage died. I think she wanted to kill him again and again. Then the coven made her a vampire hunter and everything turned around. She's on some secret task force now and working undercover in Prague half the time. I'm moving into her flat when I leave school. My parents wanted me to go to Oxford with them. They're living there, in our hunting lodge. But I couldn't be that far from Simon. My father still isn't ready to admit I have a boyfriend, and it would be too exhausting living in a place where I have to pretend I'm not a vampire or hopelessly queer. By the end of my speech, Fiona's weeping and honking her nose into a handkerchief. My father isn't crying, but he's too choked up to properly speak to me after the ceremony. Just keeps clapping me on the back and saying, "Good man." "Come on, Basil," Fiona says. "I'll take you back to Chelsea and get you sozzled. Top shelf only." "I can't," I say. "Leavers' ball tonight. I told the headmistress I'd be there."
"Can't pass up a chance to see yourself in a suit, can you?"
"I suppose not."
"Ah, well. I'll get you sozzled tomorrow, then. I'll come back for you at tea time. Watch out for numpties."
That's Fiona's standard farewell for me now. I hate it. There are a few hours before the ball, so I take a quick walk in the hills behind the walls and gather a bouquet of yellow-eyed grass and irises, then head back across the drawbridge and into the now-empty chapel. I make my way down into the catacombs without bothering to light a torch. It's been years since I got lost down here. I'm not in a hurry, so I stop to drain every rat I find on the way. This school is going to be infested when I leave. My mother's tomb is inside Le Tombeau des Enfants. It's a stone doorway in a tunnel lined with skulls marked by a bronze placard. I would have been buried here with her if I died that day. I mean, died properly. I sit by the door. There's no handle or lock. It's a piece of stone wedged into the wall. And set down the flowers.
"Some of this will be familiar to you," I say,
getting out my speech. But I've added a few flourishes of my own. A rat watches me from the corner. I decide to ignore it. When I get to the end of the speech, my head falls back against the stone. "I know you can't hear me," I say, after a minute or two. "I know you're not here. You came back and I missed you. And then I did the thing you wanted me to do, so you probably won't ever come back again." I close my eyes. "But I just wanted to tell you that I'm going to carry on, as I am. No matter how much I think about it. I don't think there's any scenario where you'd want me to... where you'd allow me to go on like this. But I think it's what you would do in my circumstances. It seems like you never gave up. Ever." I exhale roughly and stand up. Then I turn towards the door and bow my head. I speak softly so that none of the other bones can hear. "I know I usually come down here to tell you I'm sorry, but I think today I want to tell you that I'm going to be all right. Don't let me be one of the things that keeps you from peace
Mother. I'm all right. I wait for a few moments, just in case.
Then climb out of the catacombs, brushing the dust from my trousers. It's an especially grim leavers' ball. The few friends I have left at Watford are here with dates, or avoiding me. Dev and Neil haven't quite forgiven me for befriending Simon. Dev said I wasted their entire childhood plotting against him.
Oh, what else were you going to do with your childhood? I asked.
Dev didn't bother answering. I end up standing next to the punch bowl, talking to Headmistress Bunce about Latin prefixes. It's a fascinating subject, but I don't feel like I needed to put on a black tie for it. I think Professor Bunce is sad that Penelope's not here. I consider consoling her with the fact that Penelope probably would have skipped the ball even if she'd stayed in school, but the headmistress is already wandering off to the other side of the courtyard to check her email.
I was hoping there'd be more sandwiches, someone mumbles.
I ignore him because I'm not at Watford to make friends or small talk, especially on my way out.
Or at least cake.
I turn around and see Simon Snow standing on the other side of the punch table, wearing a suit and tie, with his hair properly parted and slicked to one side. He shouldn't have been able to sneak up on me like that, but he smells different these days, like something sweet and brown. No more green fire and brimstone.
How's the party?
He asks.
Funereal, I say.
How did you get here?
Flew.
My jaw drops, and he laughs.
No, Penny drove me. She let me off at the gates.
Where are your wings?
Still there, just invisible. Someone's already tripped over my tail.
I've told you to tuck it in.
It makes my trousers fit funny.
I laugh.
Don't laugh at me, he says.
When will I ever laugh, then?
Snow rolls his eyes, then cuts them nervously to the side, towards the White Chapel.
You don't have to be here, I say.
No, he says quickly. I do.
He clears his throat.
I don't want you to leave without me.
Simon Snow can't dance. The tail isn't helping. I take the end in my left hand and wrap it around my wrist, holding it against his lower back.
We don't have to do this, I'd said when we walked out to the stone patio where people were dancing. No one has to know.
Know what? Snow asked softly.
That I'm obsessed with you.
That horse left the barn a long time ago.
I press my left hand, still holding his tail, into his back and take his hand with my right. He lifts his left hand in the air, then drops it like he doesn't know what to do with it.
Put it on my shoulder, I say.
He does. I raise an eyebrow at him. Didn't Well-Beloved ever teach you to dance?
She tried, he says. She said I was hopeless.
From the mouths of babes, I say.
At least the song isn't hopeless. It's Nick Cave, Into My Arms, one of Fiona's favourites. It's so slow, we barely have to move. Snow's wearing an expensive suit. Black trousers, black waistcoat and tie, and a rich velvet jacket, deep blue with black lapels. It must be Dr. Well-Beloved's. It's snug at the shoulders, but I can't see where Snow's wings are hidden. Someone has spelled him neat and tidy. I stand with my own shoulders squared. Everyone is looking at us.
Everyone dancing.
Everyone standing around the courtyard drinking punch. Coach Mac and the Minotaur and Miss Possibelf. All standing with their punch glasses stalled on the way to their lips.
They'll know, I say. They'll talk about it.
What?
He's a million miles away. He's always a million miles away lately. They'll know we're gay, I say.
Oh, there go my job prospects, Simon says flatly.
What will my family say?
I'm not sure where the joke is. He looks at my face and huffs, exasperated.
Baz, you're actually, literally, the only thing I have to lose. So as long as doing gay stuff in public doesn't make you hate me, I don't really care.
We're just dancing, I say. That's hardly gay stuff.
Dancing's well gay, he says, even when it isn't two blokes.
I frown at him.
You have bunts, I say.
To dance with?
No, you have bunts to lose.
His face falls. I tug him closer.
No, I meant you have more than just me. You have bunts, too.
She'll move to America.
Maybe, I say. Maybe not, and anyway, not immediately. And beyond that, America's not amnesia. She'll still be your friend. Bunz only has 2.5 friends. I don't think she'll drop you.
Snow starts to say something, then shakes his head once and looks down at his feet. A few curls escape onto his forehead.
What?
I say, squeezing his hand. I've become very familiar with his hands. Dating Simon Snow hasn't been the erotic grope fest I'd always imagined. So far, it was a lot of sitting in silence and 1,000-yard stares. But we do hold hands almost all the time. Snow's like a child who's afraid of getting lost in the market. He squeezes my hand back, but he doesn't lift his head. I decide not to push him.
He's here, against all odds, wearing a tie, dancing. That's all something.
I start to let my head rest against his, and he jerks his head up, just missing my nose.
I pull my torso back. Crowley, Snow!
His face is red. It's just... He presses on my shoulder.
It's just what?
You guys don't have to do this.
Do what?
He squints and grits his teeth. The fairy lights strung across the courtyard catch in his hair.
Just... You... It's not... Use your words, Simon. You don't have to do this, you and Penny. I'm not like you. I was never... I'm a hoax.
That's not true. Baz, I'm not a mage. You lost your power, I argue. You sacrificed it. His tail whips out of my hand. It tends to slash around when he's upset.
I don't think it was ever mine, he says. I don't know how the mage did it, but you and Penny were right all along. Magicians don't give up their children.
I'm a normal.
Snow.
I was bad at magic because I wasn't supposed to have any. The gates wouldn't even open for me tonight. Penny had to let me in.
A couple is drifting closer to us, clearly listening. Kerris and her damnable pixie.
I sneer, and they drift away. Snow's crushing my hand and shoulder. I let him, even though I'm much stronger than he is.
Simon, stop. You're talking nonsense. Am I?
You and Penny care more about magic than anyone in the world of mages. That's what you saw in me. Power. And it's gone. It was never me.
It was, I say. You were the most powerful mage who's ever walked. That was real.
I was a sorry excuse for a mage. How many times did you tell me so?
I said that because I was jealous.
Well, there's nothing to be jealous of now. I let go of him. Why are you saying all this?
Simon clenches his fists, hunching in on himself like a bull.
Because I'm tired of waiting.
For what?
For all of you to stop feeling sorry for me.
I'll never stop feeling sorry for you.
It's true. He lost his magic. He will never stop breaking my heart.
But I don't want that either, he says through his teeth.
I don't belong with you anymore.
Wrong, I say.
I take his hand and put my arm back around him. The crucible drew us together.
The crucible?
I was 11 years old, and I'd lost my mother, and my soul, and the crucible gave me you.
It made us roommates, he says.
I shake my head. We were always more.
We were enemies.
You were the center of my universe, I say. Everything else spun around you.
Because of what I was, Baz, because of my magic.
No. I'm nearly as frustrated as he is.
Yes. I mean, Crowley Snow, yes, that was part of it. Looking at you was like looking directly into the sun.
I'll never be that again.
No. And thank magic.
I sigh forcefully. The way you were before, Simon Snow,
There wasn't a day when I believed we'd both live through it.
Through what?
Life. You were the sun and I was crashing into you. I'd wake up every morning and think, this will end in flames. I did set your forest on fire, but that wasn't the end.
Baz, his face crumples, in sorrow now, not anger. I can't keep up with you. I'm a normal.
Simon, you have a tail.
You know what I mean.
Look.
I bring our hands between us and knock up his chin.
Look at me.
I don't want to have to say this all the time. It's the sort of thing that's supposed to go poetically unsaid. He meets my eyes. You're still Simon Snow. You're still the hero of this story.
This isn't a story. Everything is a story, and you are the hero. You sacrificed everything for me.
He looks abashed, ashamed.
I didn't do it for you, exactly.
Fine. For me and the rest of the magical world. I was just cleaning up my own mess, Baz. Like no one would call you a hero for cleaning up your own vomit.
It was brave. It was brave and selfless and clever.
That's who you are, Simon. And I'm not going to get bored with you. He's still looking in my eyes, staring me down like he did that dragon, chin tilted and locked.
I'm not the chosen one, he says.
I meet his gaze and sneer. My arm is a steel band around his waist.
I choose you, I say.
Simon Snow, I choose you. Snow doesn't flinch or soften. For a moment, I think he's going to take a swing at me or bash his rock-hard head into mine. Instead, he shoves his face into mine and kisses me. It's still a challenge. I shove back. I let go of his hand to hold his neck. He smashes into me, and I take it. I don't give an inch. It's a mess, honestly, and if he cuts his lip on my teeth, it could be a disaster. When we break, he's panting. I press my forehead against his and feel the tension leave his neck and back.
You can change your mind, he says.
I won't. I shake my head against his forehead.
I'll always be less than you, he whispers.
I know. It's a dream come true. That makes him laugh a bit, pathetically. Still, he says, you can always change your mind.
We both can, I say.
But I won't. I should have known that this is what it would be like to dance with Simon Snow. Fighting in place. Mutual surrender. He puts both arms around my neck and slumps against me. He's either forgotten that everyone's watching or doesn't care.
Baz, he says.
Yeah?
Are you still friends with Cook Pritchard?
I assume.
It's just, I really hope there'd be sandwiches.
Agatha.
The sun shines every day in California. I've got a flat I share with two other girls from school. There's a little veranda, and I sit out there with Lucy when I get home from class, and we soak it in. The sun. Lucy's my Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. I found her in the snow outside of Watford. I thought she might be dead, but I didn't want to stop and sort it out. I just scooped her up and kept running. I know that Penny will never forgive me for running away that day, but I couldn't turn back. I couldn't. I've never felt more sure of how to stay alive. I had to run. Technically, the farthest you can get from Watford is the east of New Zealand, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. But California feels farther. I left all my old clothes at home. I wear sundresses now, and strappy sandals that tie around my ankles. I left my wand at home, too. My mother would faint if she knew. She keeps asking if I've met any magicians. California is very popular with the magical set, she says. There's even a club in Palm Springs. I don't care. I live in San Diego. My friends work in restaurants and strip mall office buildings, and I date boys who wear dark stocking caps even on warm days. On weeknights, I study. And on weekends, we go to the beach. I spend the money my parents give me on tuition and tacos.
It's all so normal. The only magician I still talk to, other than my parents and Helen, is Penelope. She texts. I tried not texting back, but that doesn't work with her. She tells me how Simon is doing. She told me about the trials. I thought I might have to go back to testify, but the coven let me do it in writing. That's the closest I've come to talking to anyone about what happened. About what I saw. About Eb. I never knew Eb. She was Simon's friend. I always thought she was balmy, living in that shack, spending her days with goats. But I know more about her now. She was a powerful magician, but she didn't do what powerful magicians do. She didn't want to be in charge. She didn't want to control people or fight. She just wanted to live at Watford and take care of goats, and they wouldn't let her. Like, they just couldn't let her be. She died in a war she had nothing to do with. There's no opting out of the world of mages. There's no thank you. I don't know why she came back to save my life. I'd never even spoken to her. Penny says I should honour Eb's memory by helping to build a better world of mages. But maybe I'll honour her memory by fucking right off the way she tried to. She told me to run. I still have the picture of the mage and Lucy. I stuck it in the mirror on my bedroom door, and I think about her sometimes when I'm getting dressed. She's the one who got away. I wonder if she's still here, in California. If she's got a family now, maybe I'll run into her at the Trader Joe's. I won't tell her that I named my dog after her. I think I'm going to send the photo to Simon someday. I'm not ready to talk to Simon yet, and I'm not sure he's ready to get a photo of the mage in the mail. But I think Simon might be the only person who really loved the mage. I know he killed him, but he's probably the person who was saddest to see him go.
Simon. Even though I'm the only one here with no magic, no one is helping me carry boxes up 4 flights of stairs. You, I say to Baz, letting a box drop on the couch, even have super strength. You could probably do this in half as many trips. Yes. He pulls the lid off his Starbucks cup so he can lick the whipped cream directly. But then your normal neighbours would start to wonder, and they're already curious about the handsome young man haunting your door day and night. The neighbours don't even know we're moving in. They're all at work. Well, they will wonder once they get a look at us. We are cool and mysterious and better looking than any couple has a right to be. He looks up at me and pulls the cup away from his mouth. Speaking of, come here, Snow, one of your wings is showing. I thought the wings would fade away or even fall off after I gave the humdrum my magic, but Penny says I used my magic to make them, and just because I gave my magic away doesn't mean everything I did with it is going to come undone. I still have the tail, too, which Baz won't stop mocking. It's not even a dragon tail. You gave yourself a cartoon devil's tail. Well, I'm sure I could have it removed, I say. I could talk to Dr. Wellbelove. Let's not do anything hasty. Penny's been casting, "These aren't the droids you're looking for," on me every morning so the normals don't notice my dragon parts, but the spell never holds all day. I'm afraid they're going to pop out during a class. Just tell people you're in a show, Baz advised. What kind of show? I don't know. It's what my Aunt Fiona always told me to say if anyone ever noticed my fangs. I sit in front of Baz now, on the coffee table, which I carried up by myself. He hands me his cup and I take a sip. What is this?
Pumpkin mocha breve.
I created it myself.
It's like drinking a candy bar, I say. I thought we were going to have tea.
Didn't Buns buy you a kettle?
You have to start figuring this stuff out, Snow. Self-sufficiency.
He holds his wand over my shoulder and taps the wing.
There's nothing to see here.
Oh, Baz, come on. You know I hate there's nothing to see here. Now people are going to be running into me all day.
Beggars can't be choosers. I don't know that robot spell of Bunce's.
Penny walks out of her bedroom.
Simon, have you seen my crystal ball?
Should I have?
It's in a box marked Careful Crystal Ball. Oh, hey, Baz, what are you doing here?
I'm going to be here all the time, Bunce. I'm going to haunt your door day and night.
Did you come to help us move in?
He puts the lid on his drink.
Hmm?
No. Baz and I talked about getting a flat together after he was done at Watford. He went back to finish second term, but I just couldn't. I mean, I could have, even though I was under house arrest. Penelope's mum would have let me. I've only been back once, for Baz's leavers ball in the spring. Maybe I'll go again someday, when it all feels further away. I'd like to visit Eb's grave deep in the wood. Agatha didn't go back to Watford either. Her parents weren't going to make her. She's going to school in California now. Penny says she has a dog. I haven't talked to her. I didn't talk to anyone for a while except for Baz and Penelope. There was a 3-month inquiry into the Major's death. In the end, I wasn't charged. Neither was Penny. She had no idea that I'd say what I said after her spell, and I had no idea what I said would kill the Mage. I thought the world of Mages would fall apart without him, but it's been 7 months, and there hasn't been a war. I don't think there will be. The Mage hasn't been replaced. The Coven decided the world of Mages doesn't need one leader, at least right now. Dr. Wellbeloved suggested that I run for the Mage's seat, and I tried not to laugh like a madman. I think I am, though, a madman. I mean, I must be. I'm seeing somebody to talk about it, a magical psychologist in Chicago, which is like one of three in the world. We do our sessions over Skype. I want Baz to talk to her too, but so far he changes the subject every time I mention it. His whole family has moved to one of their other houses up north. The magic hasn't come back to Hampshire, or any of the other dead spots. But there haven't been any new holes since Christmas. Dozens of new ones opened that day. I feel bad about that. Those are the ones I could have helped. Penny's dad keeps calling to reassure me that nothing's getting worse. I've even gone along on a few of his surveys. It's not a big deal for me to visit the holes the way it is for other magicians. I don't have any magic to lose. I mean, it is a big deal for me, but for other reasons. Penny's dad thinks the magic will come back to the dead spots eventually. He's shown me studies about plants growing in Chernobyl and about the California condor. When I told him I was going to university, he said I should study restoration ecology. It could be very healing, Simon. I don't know. I'm going to start with basic courses and see what sticks. Baz is starting at the London School of Economics in a few weeks. His parents went to Oxford, but Baz said he'd be staked before he left London. Would that actually work on you? I asked him.
What?
A stake.
I think a stake through the heart would kill anyone, Snow.
He will call me Simon now, occasionally, but only when we're being soft with each other. All that's still happening, too.
I suppose I am gay.
My therapist says it's not even in the top 5 things I have to sort out right now. Anyway, Baz and I thought about getting a flat, but we both decided that after 7 years together, it might be good to have different roommates, and Penny and I have always talked about having a place together.
I never really thought that would happen.
I never thought there was a path that would lead here. A 4th-floor flat with 2 bedrooms and a kettle, and a grey-eyed vampire sitting on the couch messing with his new phone. I never thought there was a path that would lead to both of us alive. When you look at it that way, it wasn't that much to give up. My magic. For Baz's life. For mine. Sometimes I dream that I still have it. I dream about going off, and I wake up, panting, not sure if it's true. But there's never smoke. My breath doesn't burn. My skin doesn't shimmer. I don't feel like there's a star going nova in my chest. There's just sweat and panic and my heart racing ahead of me, and my doctor in Chicago says that's all normal for someone like me. A fallen supervillain, I'll say. And she'll smile from a professional distance. A trauma victim.
I don't feel like a trauma victim. I feel like a house after a fire, and sometimes like someone who died but stayed in his body. And sometimes I feel like someone else died, like someone else sacrificed everything so that I can have a normal life. With wings, and a tail, and vampires, and magicians, and a boy in my arms instead of a girl. And a happy ending, even if it isn't the ending I ever would have dreamt for myself or hoped for. A chance.
What time is it? Penny asks. Is it too early for tea? There are biscuits in one of these boxes. I could magic them up for us.
Baz looks up from his phone. The Chosen One's making us tea the normal way, he says. It's occupational therapy.
I already know how to make tea, I say, and I wish you'd stop calling me that. You really were the Chosen One, Penny says. You were chosen to end the world of mages. Just because you failed doesn't mean you weren't chosen.
The whole prophecy is bollocks, I say. And one will come to end us, and one will bring his fall.
Did I also bring my own fall?
No, Baz says. That was me, obviously.
How did you bring my fall?
I stopped the humdrum myself.
Baz looks back at his phone, bored. Fell in love, didn't you?
Penny groans, and Baz starts laughing, trying not to crack a smile.
Enough flirting,
Penny says, flopping down into a stuffed chair her parents gave us, which I carried up by myself.
I've endured enough flirting for this lifetime. I'm hungry, Simon. Find a biscuit box.
Baz grins, then leans over and kisses my neck. I have a mole there. He treats it like a target.
Go on, then, he says.
Carry on, Simon.
We hope you've enjoyed Carry On. This program was produced by Laura Wilson. Post-production by Tim Franklin. Text copyright 2015 by Rainbow Rowell. Production copyright 2015 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.